Today, Kiwis get a 0.5% rate cut as the economy stalls and home prices fall. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and problem news. Today, we're over in New Zealand, where Dr. Michael Rim, a senior lecturer in property at the University of Auckland, was recently quoted in The Guardian as saying buyers and sellers are starting to get the impression that house prices in New Zealand do not always go up. We are finally breaking down that long-held belief, which begs the question, will the latest rate cut, as announced this week, change that tune? Because on Wednesday, New Zealand's Monetary Policy Committee reached consensus to reduce the official cash rate by a further 50 basis points to just 2.5%. And they said they remain open to further reductions in the OCR as required for inflation to settle sustainably near the 2% target. That's the midpoint in the medium term. The Reserve Bank in New Zealand was always going to cut the official cash rate at this meeting, although markets and economists were somewhat divided on the likely outcome, with the weight of opinion slightly favouring a 25 basis point cut. The underlying theme is the spare capacity which is building in New Zealand's economy, with a sluggish read on the economy, which explains the consensus decision this time compared with August, when two members dissented for a 50 basis point cut then. Now, it is true that the considerably weak second quarter GDP result was thanks to an unusual set of noise in the system. And it's worth noting that the New Zealand third quarter GDP nowcast is up 0.7% over the quarter. And there's an improving read from Stats New Zealand's activity index as well, which could suggest that the economy is not so weak as the committee is reading it. We'll see what emerges when the third quarter CPI and the third quarter labour report are released ahead. But clearly, the bank is expecting continued weakness amid wider geopolitical and economic uncertainty, which pushes down on medium-term inflation. By the way, on inflation, the committee pointed to a more resilient global economy, gradually waning uncertainty, and a weaker New Zealand dollar to support New Zealand exports, all potentially leading to, guess what, higher inflation. But on the other hand, the current resilience observed in the global economy is largely related to AI-driven investment growth, they said, particularly in equity markets. So it's not clear how long this would be sustained. And the Reserve Bank of New Zealand assessed that global resilience this year may represent a difference in the timing rather than the extent of the negative impacts of trade restrictions on growth. So all up, it seems the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's assessment of global growth does remain muted, albeit modestly higher, with actually net little inflationary pressure near term. Now, exploring the AI risks theme a little more on the way through, there is, of course, continued hype and optimism about the potential for AI technology, which has led to a massive rise in valuations in recent months. The latest phase is a significant program of cross-investments, with data showing how many of the big players are cross-leveraged to each other. And companies such as OpenAI, now worth $500 million, compared to the $157 billion last October, and another firm, Anthropic, has almost trebled its valuation, going from $60 billion in March to $170 billion last month. But it's worth noting here that the Bank of England's Financial Policy Committee warned on Wednesday that the risks of a sharp market correction has increased. On a number of measures, equity market valuations appear stretched, particularly for technology companies focused on AI, they said. This leaves equity markets particularly exposed should expectations around the impact of AI become less optimistic. And it said investors had not fully accounted for these potential risks, warning that a sudden correction could occur should any of them crystallize, resulting in finance drying up for households and businesses. And the FPC in the UK added, as an open economy with a global financial centre, the risk of spillovers to the UK financial system from such global shocks is material. And, of course, faith in the AI boom has been recently rattled by research from the MIT, which showed that 95% of organizations are getting zero return from investments in generative AI. So that has led to concerns that stock market valuations could tumble if investors ended up disappointed by the progress or adoption of AI technology. And the FPC said that this could drive a re-evaluation of currently high expected future earnings. And it added material bottlenecks to AI progress from power, data, or commodity supply chains, as well as conceptual breakthroughs which changes the anticipated AI infrastructure requirements for the development and utilization of powerful AI models could also harm valuations, including for companies whose revenue expectations are derived from high levels of anticipated AI infrastructure investment. And by the way, the committee also said that the Trump administration's continued threats against the US Federal Reserve were putting financial stability at risk, and policymakers said there were threats of a sharp repricing of US dollar assets if the Federal Reserve lost credibility in the eyes of global investors. It comes, of course, as Donald Trump continues to attack the US central bank and threatens its independence. Now back to New Zealand, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand maintained its August judgment that significant spare capacity in the economy will be sufficient to dampen domestically generated inflation. But the economic hole does look bigger now, which means that more monetary policy support will be needed to deliver a 2% inflation outcome on a sustainable basis. Costs are still rising, though, with price increases from local authority rates, insurance, energy, and tobacco, which combined constitutes about 10% of the CPI regime, and they have directly accounted for around 30% of the 2.7% annual increase in CPI prices in the June 2025 year. However, price increases for those components are largely cost-driven. So some would argue that there's a strong case for the Reserve Bank of New Zealand to look through the near-term inflation spike and focus on the medium-term inflation determinants, including inflation expectations and capacity metrics, despite the fact that households in New Zealand are paying way, way more these days for many day-to-day items. Actually, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand expects CPI inflation to approach 2% from the first half of 2026 as tradables inflation pressures dissipate and spare capacity continues to moderate domestically generated inflation. So we'll see about that. Now, we should also note that longer-term interest rates remain sticky, though, partly thanks to the higher yields from the US and other markets. ASB produced an interesting chart that tracks the change in trajectory of rates over time. The stickiness of longer-term rates may be curbing businesses from making decisions, as businesses may not yet view the interest rates relevant for their businesses as being low enough. And all other things equal, the steepness of the yield curve does add to the case for further easing. 50 basis point cut, by the way, triggered swift market reactions, with the New Zealand dollar and interest rates falling. New Zealand dollar dropped against the US dollar and also against the Aussie dollar, and New Zealand yields were lower across the board, with swaps down between 2 and 10 basis points. But this curve continued to steepen, and markets have a 25 basis point cut fully priced in November, with a terminal rate of around 2%. Ray Attrill, head of foreign exchange research at National Australia Bank, said that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's openness to further easing, along with new data implying downside GDP risks, effectively supports continued bets that the Aussie will outperform the Kiwi, even though policymakers indicated a 25 basis point move was on the table. The tone of the statement suggests the Reserve Bank of New Zealand remains focused on supporting growth amid softer economic signals. The stance reflects expectations that New Zealand's rates could stay lower for longer relative to Australia's. Now, incidentally, I note the committee mentioned potential supply constraints, overstating some weakness in agriculture and manufacturing sectors. That level of granularity regarding primary producers could reflect some new, more agricultural-focused voices at the New Zealand MPC table. But such significant rate cuts and mortgage rate declines usually results in a significant increase in home values due to greater borrowing capacity and loan serviceability. But the reverse has occurred this time around in New Zealand, with housing values failing to respond so far. Last week, Cotality reported that dwelling values rose by 0.1% in September, following five consecutive monthly declines. But in the September quarter, housing values fell by 0.7%. As a result, Cotality estimates that New Zealand home values have decreased on average by 17.3% from their peak. And commenting on results, Cotality's chief property economist, Kelvin Davidson, said that the stock of available listings, while falling, remains relatively high, and caution continues to pervade the market. And meanwhile, Auckland's largest real estate agency, Barfoot & Thompson, reported that the median dwelling price continued its downward trend in September, going in at $930,000 for the month, down $20,000 compared to both July and August, and down by more than $51,000 since March. September's median price was also the lowest September result since 2020. We are definitely seeing a rise in for sale listings, with property website realestate.co.nz reporting last week that the total number of homes listed for sale on the website was just over 30,700 at the end of September. That was up 2.4% from August and an 11-year high for the month of September. This mountain of homes listed for sale has provided buyers with lots of choice and tilted price negotiations in their favour. It's clearly a solid buyer's market, with evidence of more vendors entering the market to sell. And rental prices also continue to slide, with asking rents, for example, in Wellington on the slide, down another 6.9%. So reflect that 3 years ago, New Zealanders would have found it almost impossible to imagine the country's sky-high house prices falling. The market was deemed one of the least affordable in the world, with house prices nearly nine times the average income and supply dismally low. Desperate first home buyers were being squeezed out of the market by cash up investors. Some of those in low paid or no work were thrust into homelessness, and wait lists for social housing ballooned. In the middle of 2021, the crisis reached fever pitch, with the national average house price exceeding 1 million New Zealand dollars. But now those prices are trending downward. According to government owned property valuer QV, national averages have fallen 13% since 2021, while Auckland has dropped nearly 20% and Wellington 30%, prompting questions about whether New Zealand has finally managed to turn around its housing crisis and what it could mean for other overheated markets around the world. Yet, the housing market could only be viewed as affordable if you compare it with the Mount Everest of house prices, said Brad Olson, an economist and chief executive at Infometrics. Around 40% of the average household income is spent on mortgages, most affordable than the peak years when it reached 47%, but it's not really affordable. And Prime Minister Christopher Luxon told RNZ recently that he hoped to see modest price increases. His housing minister, though, Christopher Bishop, wants to see them fall. House prices outright falling would actually be advantageous, Olson said, adding that decoupling investment and housing is a good thing. That will be difficult because many people have their wealth tied up in a house, Olson said, but over time, we've seen the sort of social ills and social challenges that have been created by having an overly hot and too expensive housing market. So all up, the New Zealand economy remains in the doldrums, and a combination of weaker migration. Recall that a few years ago we were seeing 100,000 new people coming into New Zealand every year, as well as weak economic activity and consumer confidence, is leading to this weaker property outcome. So it'll be interesting to see if the latest rate cut does turn the ship around, but I suspect not. But then again, that may not actually be a bad thing. Australia, please note. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.